welcome to another episode of Lie, Cheat, and Steal, the podcast about liars, frauds, thieves, and bullshitters. I'm your host, Pat Sorois, and just to let you guys know, we are a bi-monthly podcast, and you can also find us on Twitter at LCS Podcast. We're on TikTok at Lie, Cheat, Steal Podcast. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening to us at. And if you're really into it, you can also get 2 more episodes every month on our Patreon at patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. That out of the way, I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Kath Barbadoro. Kath, how you doing?
Hi, Pat. I'm doing good. I'm currently upstate again. I'm in the Hudson Valley for a little, you know, farm stand perusing. Gonna get some apples. Gonna do all that wholesome Yankee Candle fall shit. Even though it's fucking 90 degrees out still. It, like, doesn't feel like fall at all. But, you know, yeah, I'm cat sitting. The reason I was a little bit late to record because I was lying in bed and the senior cat that I'm cat sitting, Will, just decided to park right on my chest, just like inches from my face. And I was like, I'm not getting up. Will's comfortable. Yeah. This is the time, you know?
You can't fuck that up. Man, right. It sounds like upstate New York is a great place to be in fall. It seems like they're about to call you Humpty Dumpty because you're going to have a great fall.
Exactly. It is. It's not quite like optimal yet because the leaves haven't started changing or anything, but like it's very wholesome. It's very like when you think of like I said, Yankee Candle, it's like some Thomas Kincaid shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. To talk about, reference our last episode where we talked about that kind of stuff.
Thomas
How
Kincaid
are you, Pat?
Coming up a lot. I'm good. I'm actually in a really good mood today. I got off the road. I'm working a new job, and like you said, when you're right on the cusp of like getting everything back together, and it's like I paid my car off, so that's a huge expense every month. Gone. Very excited about that. But I'm so excited that my car is currently. I had tire issues all week. I'm talking about. I was changing spares into donuts on a tilted driveway, had it falling on my brake pad. Was getting rough. And it's currently the donut popped today or yesterday. Now you're like, hey, how are you in such a good mood? Even though the donut popped, it's because at the union job, I can just say, hey, not coming in tomorrow, taking care of my car. I have the money to take care of it. It's the last problem until the next problem. But it's like it's the last problem. I'm like right there. The lights at the end of the tunnel, just being like, I've been doing, like, you know, I've been keeping my head above water, but I'm like one check away from just being like, boom, I'm comfortable. I'm straight again.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
Whoo, yeah, it's a good feel. And there's been a lot of plate spinning.
It'll age you to be that sort of like close to the edge. I'm like currently, I feel like we have switched places because I am currently in the like $50 from overdraft zone on my on my finances. It's fine. It's just like I think I've complained about this before. I got like so fucked on my taxes this year that like I just owe the government so much money.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's like, I don't have a car payment, but I have like a car payment worth of money to the government that it's a pain in the ass. But, so it's just, I know from right now that, having that weight lifted is amazing. And when you have it on you, it's like, yeah, it just adds to the ambient level of stress of living so bad. So I'm so glad you're out of it. That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you to everyone who signed up for our Patreon. A, you're helping me pay back the government. B, you're helping Pat pay off his car. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, we cannot thank y'all enough, man. I just had like, I had like 8 things. I'm in like 8 transitional periods. Not like 8, but it's like, you know, relationship, job, lifestyle. Yeah. Like I was, you know, anybody, listeners know, I was just torn for the last 3 years. My days consisted of, I woke up and I was like, let's see, how many joints am I going to smoke and what HBO show am I going to finish today? And it was, and I'm not going to lie, I loved it. There was a little bit of like, you know, obviously I didn't have like the money, a super comfortable amount of money, but I was good, you know, like.
Sure, yeah,
I was
just
kind of chill. And now it's like I'm getting all my ducks back in a row and like it's getting used to like not having free time. But it's finding the rhythm. It's finding, okay, this is when my free time is. How do I utilize it the best.
Right.
And right. It kind of, you know,
it helps you enjoy it more to not have constant unstructured time, I think. I mean, obviously more free time is better than less free time, but like you really savor it when you only have a little
bit. And also like, man, like, I mean, I got my shit together, but the kind of stuff I'll get up to when I got fucking 24 hours to kill. You know what I mean? Yeah, I know that's not good. You know what I'm saying?
Pat, like, you're becoming a citizen is what you're becoming.
I was feral.
You're a civilian now.
Yeah, so it's been good. But so I've actually been working on this segue, not really working on it all day, but I thought of the segue earlier. And it ties right into what we're saying. Speaking of just like a real constant of the working class, something that anybody who's been going through it is totally familiar with what I'm about to talk about today. That's the restaurant Subway. Like if you've never eaten Subway, that means you've never had a job. And that's what I feel like, because that is the official restaurant of lunch off work. You go to Subway, you grab a sandwich because they're quick and there's fucking 15 on every block, you know?
Yeah. They're everywhere. It's so crazy. I have a sense that's what we're going to be talking about today is how they're everywhere.
Yeah, how they're everywhere, how they got there, and who they got there at the expense of. So
besides their customers.
Yeah, besides their customers. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if you, I don't know how you feel. I think Subway is so gross. I've absolutely eaten it for lunch. Constantly. It used to be, when I was younger, I was vegetarian, and back in the day, it was like the only, if you were like driving down a highway or something, it was one of the only places you could get like a vegetarian meal.
Yeah.
So you just get like a veggie sub or something.
Yeah.
And it's gross. It was terrible to not have options. It sucks. Yeah.
I was on a weight loss kick one time when I was like, it was like the first time I ever like put any effort into like learning how to diet. And I was working in West Farms Mall in Hartford, Connecticut, and they had some really good options for lunch. But one day I was broke, and so I had to get like a healthy option at Subway. And I got I was like, get a plain turkey with spicy mustard and onion and spinach on wheat.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I got that, and it was A, just disgusting. And B, because like you can jazz a Subway sandwich up, like just like throw a bunch of that weird sauce on it, whatever. You can make it.
Yeah, it's edible. Yeah.
Yeah. But this was like every edible fucking facet of Subway was out of this sandwich. And I ate it.
It had gone wrong.
And when I say it made me sick, I don't mean like it made me like gastrointestinally sick. I swear that shit gave me the flu.
I believe it.
I ate it. Yeah, I was sick. I was like, ugh. I had chills and aches and shit. It sucked. But I've eaten a bunch of Subway as most working Americans have. And it does. They're everywhere. But I got to give the shout out to this friend of mine. He's a comic. We don't do comedy much anymore. But Nick Ortiz, he has a wonderful podcast that's about Taco Bell called The Cheesy Gordita Bunch.
That's
him and his boys talking Taco
Bell.
The other place,
very respectable vegan and vegetarian options at a Taco Bell.
Oh,
Surprisingly good. Yeah.
You can get in there. And so, like, he was telling me, we hung out, and I live in the same apartment complex as him now, so we decided to hang out the other day, and we were just talking, like, you know, podcast topics, and he put me on to this thing about Subway that I'd always figured, but I didn't know about, and newsflash, corporations, kind of shitty, so we're going to dive, basically, we're going to talk about Subway's franchise model is very predatory, very scammy, and it's set up to kind of, like, foot the bill of building a Subway onto a franchise owner and then having a million ways they can misstep and the company seizing the franchise from them after it's been worked to be established by these people who overwhelmingly are immigrants, because that's the American dream.
Okay.
Yeah. American
sure.
Dream.
Yeah.
Come to America, get paid, own a restaurant, get paid to fucking feed us our hog slop that we love so much. And just like, you know, that's, I get it. I totally understand it. But yeah, let's go ahead and dive right in. Cover the bases. Let's get to the origins of Subway. Speaking of New England, you're upstate New York, same thing to me.
Close enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
As far as what we were saying about fall, it's the same thing. It's all
exactly.
Apple orchards and sweaters. That's what's going on here.
Cider and corn. You know, so Subway started in 1965. It was founded by a guy named Fred DeLuca in Milford, Connecticut. And it came out under the name of Pete's Super Submarines. Not a fantastic name.
Kind of a mouthful, yeah.
Yeah.
Subway. Subway is a, I will say that is a great name for a sub shop. Like,
yeah, they
brilliant.
Nailed it on that one. Yeah, yeah, you could have thought of a better one. But yeah, he got a $1,000 loan from a family friend because he wanted to pay for his own college. He realized that he wanted to make some money, so he's like, I'll start a little sandwich shop. They did it. It hit, and out the gate, his focus was entirely on growth, growing the business. To the point where, like, they had 16 franchises a few years in, but they didn't turn a profit for 15 years.
Oh, man.
Because he was just like, let's start these, start another one, start another one.
He's and like the Uber of sub sandwich places.
Yeah, yeah.
Just growth, and, growth, growth, push out the competition, then raise your sub prices, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we're gonna. I'm gonna get into the lesser controversies surrounding Subway. So now, of course, what makes the franchise model is pretty popular in fast food businesses, you know. And Subway is far easier to buy one than a lot of other places. It's only $15,000. Oh, go ahead.
The way a franchise works. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's like you basically buy a like licensing deal from the parent company, right? And then you sort of run it yourself based on like a manual that they give you.
Yep.
And the idea is basically like they sort of come around and check and make sure you're doing all the stuff that they need you to do. And then otherwise it's sort of your own business, right?
Yes. Yeah, yeah, very much so. Especially for a lot of other places. With Subway, we'll come to find out, that's what's pitched, is that you'll be your own boss. But it's very, it becomes very clear that they are not interested in all, or really don't care if you succeed, as long as your location succeeds. Because
it's sort of a way for them to get a Subway into a physical location.
Yes, yeah.
That's kind of the goal. Okay,
very much so. Yeah, they put it just like Uber. It's all done on the backs of immigrants and working poor.
Sure.
And so, yeah. So yeah, they have like they're very simple. It's $15,000. To start a Subway franchise.
Yeah, that's not that bad.
Not that bad. And like a lot of places, like a McDonald's, I believe, is $45,000. And so as a result, most of like your most like of your fast food places are actually owned by investment groups. I used to work at a Dairy Queen that was like, it was seven Dairy Queens in the little region, and it was called Cinco DQ. Because I think they started with five, but they added two more, but it was called Cinco. And our checks came from Cinco Dairy Queen.
Nice.
And like that was, you know, it was like, it was an investment group. It wasn't like some, you know, guy that really liked Dairy Queen and bought five, you know. It was an investment group. Well, Subway, that's a little atypical. It's mainly immigrants and families that buy these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a simple startup because they have no grills. They have no fryers. You don't have to build a vent hood. You know, there's none of the, like at one point they say all you need is a plug. Which is,
get that sandwich warmer going and then.
Yeah.
You need maybe a meat slicer. Maybe not. Maybe they just ship you the pre-sliced meat and then you're
I think they used
good.
To send you pre-sliced meat. I think now they slice at the site just because people are like, hey, this is dog food you're feeding us.
Yeah, this is disgusting. That's a friend of the show, Danny Palumbo, used to have a joke about how the turkey at Subway is ham based. And he's like, how is that possible? What is that? Why is the meat wet? The eternal question.
Why is the meat wet? I love Danny Palumbo. Go follow his Instagram. He sells plates of pasta on the weekends that just, God, every time. It's like, shit, I will move to where you're at, Danny.
I'm so jealous that he lives in LA because he makes handmade pasta. It's great. He has a really great Substack about food too called The Move LA. So definitely check that out. Yep. I love Danny. He's the best.
Yep.
Great cook. Great comic. Yeah. Anyway.
Danny Palumbo. Yeah, I was just telling a story about how when I was in St. Louis hanging out for like, I was waiting to get picked up for a comedy tour. I was day drinking at a Italian bar with a bocce ball court. And I was joking. That I was like, I'm just going to go into every house in this neighborhood and go, hey, do you know Danny? Hey, do you know Kat? So most... they're ran by families, and Subway is also one of the least profitable. And so, as we all know right now, it's one of the property wise, the largest restaurant chain in the world at the moment.
It's
or
so
at least
crazy
it was very
it's
recently.
So bad.
It's so bad. Yeah,
I don't get it. Like, how are there so many? I mean, I guess we're gonna find out. But
and they only make on average 400,000 a year. Which is much lower. Yeah, the average Jimmy John makes a couple mil a year.
Yeah.
You know, like a Jersey Mike's, they all make a lot more. Subway doesn't make that much money. Mm-hmm. And they also, their percentages off top, the VIG, if we want to talk fucking organized crime, this is all this shit is, the fucking VIG is 12.5.
And wow, yeah, that's 8%, high.
Yeah, 8% is some straight off your sales, and then you pay 4.5% of your income towards advertising. And that's one thing we know about Subway is they advertise like a, you know, like a mug, man. They're, you know, they have goddamn Megan Rapinoe and Tom Brady and RG3 all sitting around eating sandwiches. You know, it's like they really put a lot of money into advertising.
It's one of those things like how like Coca-Cola advertises so much where it's like, we all know about Subway.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you don't need to remind me.
Right. Like, what is the marginal percentage increase in customers are you getting from commercials? Because, like, we know. Yeah. We get it. I guess for reminding me about Subway.
I think most large companies advertising these days is all like apologetic and like rehabilitory. Somebody of it is like, hey, I know we sucked for years, but we don't suck anymore.
And then isn't your grandma's Subway. Yeah, whatever, you know.
Like it is because my grandma owns a Subway because our family's locked in by predatory contracts. Anyway, so Subway has not been, it goes without saying, Subway has not been without its controversies over the years. And of course, you have the big one, the one that looms over all of this is just the giant pedophilic pants of Jared Fogle.
Like, sure. Yep. Kind of the main association. I guess that is why they have to advertise so much. Cause
yeah.
People are like, hey,
associate themselves with literally any other person.
Anyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's throwing shit at the wall to see what it sticks. Like Pat Mahomes, fucking, you know, like,
right.
Yeah.
The bar is on the floor for who could be better than a known imprisoned pedophile.
Oh man. So yeah, but what's funny is so you can't tell the Subway story without talking about Jared Fogle. We all know what he did. We're not going to get into it on the show, but he had such a big impact on that company that it literally plays into what we're going to talk about today. Just there's pre Jared Subway and there's post Jared Subway.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's two different worlds. So, but over the years, they've had such, pretty much all of their controversy has been surrounding, I have it written down as, chicken, not chicken. That was when everybody said, hey, your chicken's not chicken. It's mainly soy. They did some studies. It turns out, no, it's chicken enough for us to say chicken legally. Then it was, hey, your tuna's not tuna. And I was like, well, no, technically, legally it is tuna. And then somebody was like, hey, your bread's not bread. It's like, what are you guys? What are you guys? What are you guys fucking doing here?
Your bread's not bread. There's a tweet about Starbucks food that I think applies to Subway where it's like, when you get food at Starbucks, you're like, this 3D printed sandwich is really good. It's like somehow not food, but it is.
Yeah. That is 100% true. I've had to eat Subway food, but not Subway, but Starbucks food before. And you're just like, yeah, this is like an advertisement for food. It's not actually food.
An ad for food is exactly right. I am like, I am so baffled by the popularity of Starbucks. I don't think their coffee's good and their food is atrocious.
Yeah.
And like the vibe in a Starbucks is bad. I mean, that might be a New York thing. Cause like, it's like a public bathroom. So like the whole store becomes a public bathroom, you know? But, I just like the fact that it's like sort of a lifestyle thing where it's like, you know, mom, like for like white women to be like, got my Starbies. It's like, this sucks. Why do you go there? Anyway, that's a total tangent. Starbucks is the Subway of coffee.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't get it. Shots fired. Yeah. as somebody who, like when I was on tour, there's a lot of times where like you're driving into town to do the show and your next show is far enough out that you have to leave after. So you have no hotel. So you just have to find a place to hang out. And like, I like not even on some grassroots like Keep Austin Weird type shit. I'm not like, oh, I always go to a local place if I can. It was literally just like, Starbucks sucks. I know the local place is gonna be better. Like, it's gonna be a better vibe. It's gonna be a better hang. I went to a coffee place in Kalispell, Montana, and I had a Zoomer tell me as I was ordering coffee that I had a good vibe. And I was like, fuck yeah, girl.
Tight. That's
she was
awesome.
Like 19. She's
congrats.
Like, hey, can I just say you have like good vibes? And I was like,
it's true.
That's the nicest thing anyone said to me this year. Can I get that in writing? Actually, just ruin the vibes. But Of the lesser Subway controversies, though, chicken not chicken, tuna not tuna, bread not bread, footlong not footlong, mm-hmm. was one. But this is, so they ended up debunking this. It was a footlong, you know, especially in the way that they put their toppings in there. They come out like a half inch on either side. They're like, we're good. But yeah. I did some digging on this one, and this is just capitalism at its fucking finest. So Subway, basically, we had 12-inch subs, and that they weren't actually 12 inches long. Well, they did a whole fucking test, and then a law firm was like, we'll do a class action. And they ended up getting, they did a class action lawsuit.
About the subs not being long enough?
The subs not being long.
They got false advertising. Yep. You owe these people, I've been eating a foot long every day. That's an inch a day that you owe me. That's 1/12 of the price of the sandwich. Yeah, that's so funny.
A picket sign, 365 inches, please. this is just like, I don't know, this is just fucked. It kind of made me mad. These lawyers got like thousands of people together, and they did a class action lawsuit, and then like somebody stepped in and was like, hey, this is crazy. You can't really prove this. So they settled out of court, and the settlement was for $520,000, so $500,000. All of it went, 10 plaintiffs got $5,000 each, and the rest went to the lawyers. That's money that just appeared out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
They were just like, oh, well, yeah, fuck it. Okay, here's, so that was $520, that's $470,000. Just like,
goddamn.
Yeah, like, so that's insane. But that being said, so let's dive in to Subway, talk about the business model, and kind of get into it here. So Subway, the largest fast food company in the world by store count, with more than 24,000 restaurants in the United States alone. It got that way thanks in large part to entrepreneurial immigrants. Unlike chains such as McDonald's and Burger King. Oh, by the way, I'm reading from a New York Times article that's very, it's called Subway Got Too Big Too Fast. Where many franchises are operated by investment firms, like with McDonald's and Burger King, Subway owners are mostly individuals and families. Now, like we called through, it's like $45,000 to open one. And for, $45,000 to open a McDonald's versus $15,000 for your Subway. So for half a century, the system worked to mutual advantage. Subway's value hit $12.3 billion at its height. And countless first-generation Americans bootstrapped their way to success 1 foot long at a time. So by the time Mr. DeLuca died in 2015, though, the company was struggling. Jimmy John's and Quiznos had kind of outpassed him. You had Jared Fogel and all his fucking bullshit. And then his sister, Suzanne Greco, took over as chief executive, inheriting a company that many felt had grown too fast and haphazardly. In 2016, for the first time ever, more Subway stores closed than opened. Mm-hmm. But while many franchises shut down because of underperformance, others operating profitable locations began to feel targeted. You know, not by like, you know, the pressures of the economy, but by the company itself. So for many store owners, Subway's internal workings are largely a mystery because the chain, which is private, offers far less financial information than other global fast food peers. In the most recent version of a disclosure document given to prospective franchises, which is more than 600 pages long, the company notes that it can revise its rules, quote, at any time during the term of your franchise agreement, under any condition and to any extent.
Okay.
So this contract you're signing means nothing. It means nothing. It means everything to you. It means jack shit to us.
Yeah.
So now there was a guy named, the document would be difficult for anybody to process, but a guy named Alexander Dimsky, who was a trainer for Subway for 34 years, he estimated that 30 to 50% of the chain's franchisees were immigrants, and that more than a third of them scored poorly on proficiency tests in math and English.
Yeah. Even a fluent native speaker is going to probably have trouble with this contract, but most of the people owning franchises, it's like a lost cause for them.
Yeah. And then you come to America, you see one on every fucking corner. You're like, oh,
right.
Well, these
must be
successful.
I can buy into this. Yeah, totally.
So what they do, how the corporate structure breaks down is that they have, quality assurance, kind of like people who are in charge of large regions, and they're known as development agents. So a development agent for Subway, they have like, you know, little regions and almost like little fiefdoms, and they go around and they oversee shit. And here's the thing, though, is most of those development agents, if not all of them, most of them are also franchise owners. Mm-hmm. So they own their own Subway franchise. Now, Subway says, well, that means that they know the inner workings of the business and they get it. But the fact is that when somebody violates enough laws or enough little, like, if they get checked off or dinged or your store's not meeting, you know, it's
right.
fucking
the
it's
subway thing. Laws, not the real
yeah, yeah,
laws.
The subway Hammurabi's code and the subway laws, equal in age and importance. But they so at that point you are contractually Subway is able to contractually relieve you of your franchisee shit with a minimal payout, if any, and then that can be sold to another franchise owner at a
right.
discounted rate. And
right.
So
these development agents are basically they're overseeing Subways that are direct competitors of them because it's in their region.
Yes.
So if they see one that's good, yeah, this I can see how this is heading for trouble.
Yeah. 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 It's just it's a breeding ground for this is like bacteria when you leave when you leave meat out and the thing is just a breeding ground for just craziness. So and many of the franchisees who lost their restaurants say they recouped little of their original investments. And intervention, and you can make a complaint, but intervention from Subway's headquarters in Connecticut is rare. So for years, the Subway system's opacity and aggressive pace of development went hand in hand. The company encouraged stores to open within blocks of existing locations, with development agents often giving the established franchisees a choice, and this is fucked. Operate the new restaurant themselves, so take on another restaurant, including the $15,000 startup fee, or compete yep. with somebody. Mm. What do you want to do? Yeah. Do you
this
want to
is like mafia
want...
shit.
It really is. It's insane. It's like, dude, I don't know if I mentioned this. I knew a guy. I wasn't friends with this guy, but I knew a guy who used to steal people's shit and then call them, and they'd be like, hey, dude, sorry, can't talk right now. My TV got stolen. But yeah, no, I stole it. You need to come buy it back. and they'd be like, what? He's like, yeah, come buy it back. Like, no, I don't want it. But no, you're going to come buy it back. We're going to have a problem. And yeah, just shit. Yeah, that guy's dead now and for good reasons. But yeah, that's like, it's straight up criminal stuff. It's like, hey, man, we're going to open one on the street. You can either open one or we'll open one. What do you want? You know?
Right. Yeah.
And that is such
so they are they are they building these before they have a franchisee signed on for them? Is it like they open one and then they're like Subway for sale?
I would imagine that they get a line in on a location and they say, hey, and they go to the franchise owner and say, hey, we're going to open one here. It could be yours or it could be somebody else's, but this is where we want yep. one at.
Got
and
it. Okay.
They do this like crazy subtraction soup math where they're like, actually, it's better for everyone when there's more Subways closer to each other. And an economist was like, that makes no sense because if that was yeah. true, why not open 15 on one block?
Like, right. Why not have that? A Subway district in the city? Yeah.
Yeah. by that logic, you know? And so we're going to tell a little story now of a guy named, a gentleman by the name of Manoj Tripathi. And Manoj Tripathi is a franchisee owner from India. So he said it was assumed that the stores would eventually become more sustainable. He had bought into Subway's expansion in a major way. After two decades spent at companies like Jamba Juice and Body Shop, opening Subway franchises in his mind was his chance to take charge. At one point, he owned 38 stores. And by 2015, he was among the largest franchisees in California's East Bay region. But Manoj Tripathi couldn't shake the feeling that someone had a vendetta against his Subway sandwich shop. A franchisee for nearly two decades, he had done everything he could do to keep his restaurant in a strip mall in Northern California in perfect condition. But lately, it seemed like someone was out to get him. It was middle of 2017, and inspectors sent by Subway's regional manager were finding a new problem to cite each month. Shit like a handprint on a glass door, the wrong brand of bathroom soap, cucumber slices that were too thick. At one point, he said one of these guys says they got written up because their vegetables were too choppy. It's like, bitch, I chop vegetables. I don't know what the fuck you want me to do.
Right.
About that.
What do you want? That's wild. Yeah. So they're just they're finding everything possible
finding
to
anything
ding this guy.
And so, each little thing was a write-up, and Tripathi's grip on his store seemed to weaken. If he racked up enough infractions, the Subway could terminate his contract and take control of the business. Mm-hmm. So when an inspector named Rebecca Hustler, baby, it's probably Huesler, but yeah, I'm saying Hustler. She arrived one day in September, and Mr. Tripathi had thought his restaurant was pristine. Then he noticed that a single light fixture needed to be a new bulb.
Okay.
So Mr. Tripathi runs out to buy a replacement. By the time he returned, though, Hustler had marked that as a violation. A year later, just as he feared, he lost the Subway. So Tripathi wasn't like paranoid. Yeah, this is fucked. It's straight up criminal. And so he wasn't tripping though. He was not like imagining this, because Miss Huesler ended up coming forward and she was like, yeah, I was like, I was told specific instructions from my boss, the regional subway supervisor, to find fault with the store. She said, quote, I was kind of his hitman, which is like insane. This is sandwiches. Why are we talking about hitman? That doesn't even fucking go together.
I feel like that's somebody who's got to glamorize their really boring job.
Yeah, just, yeah, take a drag.
I'm basically Mike from Breaking Bad, but for Subway.
I was a hitman. Yeah, for sure. So this is kind of funny to bring back Starbucks. I was kind of his hitman, she said, sipping an iced tea at a Starbucks in the Bay Area.
See? These go hand in hand, these bad fast food places. Yeah,
she gets a very large picture in this fucking New York Times write-up. I don't know. I don't know. It's just weird. It's a very flattering and large photo of her in this.
She probably
article.
Was like one of the only ones who spoke with them. That's probably why.
I would imagine. Yeah.
So they're like, well, we'll do you a solid. We'll put a good picture.
We'll make you look
Times.
Good, girl. We got you. So she said she worked for that regional supervisor for nearly a year, and that she has come to regret the role she played in pushing a group of store owners out of their investments. The light bulb moment with Mr. Tripathi especially gave her pause. She said, we're ruining these people, which she was. So that was when the owner died, DeLuca, his sister, Miss Greco, takes over the subway, and the company's store count began to shrink. In the East Bay, Mr. Tripathi was under the jurisdiction of a development agent named Chirayu Patel, otherwise known as Aki. Aki oversaw a huge choice territory. I hate the word choice. So gross. It's choice. Fucking disgusting. Anyways. But he oversaw a huge choice territory that included most of Northern California and Western Nevada. I have been in a fucking subway in Western Nevada at a gas station in the middle of nowhere. And I was like, has corporate even called y'all in 6 months? Do they know you're here anymore? It's insane.
It's like the subway on the space station. They're just no one's coming. Out of communication.
So, in 2016, our boy Tripathi, he convened Aki. He holds a franchise meeting in a Sacramento warehouse, and he told everyone that Subway wanted to. And if you've ever worked like corporate or sales, this is a scary sentence. We want to improve our stronger restaurants and shut down our weaker ones.
Yeah.
That's basically being like, hey, the jig's up, y'all. It's right. Put up or shut up. You're getting fucking fired. Like,
right.
Yeah. I've always found in corporate situations that if you get called to a meeting and the food's, the worse the food is, the better the news is. Like, if you come in there, there's like some danishes or whatever. It's just like, hey, you guys got to work late. But if you come in there, it's like a full ass spread. It's just like, let's make a plate, shake everybody's hand. Hey, thanks for the
That's
opportunity.
That's your last supper. Yeah. Totally.
Somebody who attended this meeting was another store owner named Niku Alak. And again, these are all, I believe, like Indian or Southwest Asian immigrants. She left the gathering alarmed. She and many fellow franchisees had been pushed for years to invest huge sums in new stores and now were struggling. Subway's franchise contract forbids the company from unilaterally closing stores just because sales are weak. But franchisees can lose control of their restaurants for failing to meet Subway's operating standards.
Right.
Violations cited by inspectors employed by development agents like Mr. Patel. That's Aki. So
hence the light bulb.
Yeah, exactly. Miss Alok said Mr. Patel eventually pressured her into closing or selling her four stores in Sacramento after they received a slew of bad evaluations. She said, I would have liked to stay in business for another 10 to 15 years. I wanted to make more money, but I had no other choice. Vishal Sharma, a franchisee. We're seeing a pattern in these fucking names. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
This is like where I feel like it's really predatory, because it's just like, again, they said like many of these people, they didn't have firm grasp of the English language. They could communicate. They weren't stupid people. But when it comes to legalese and jargon, it's
sure.
Like, you know,
it's hard enough. Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard enough. Yeah. I don't understand the shit.
And I can't imagine most of these people are retaining legal counsel or anything to go through these contracts. They're just like, they're just people with $15,000. It sounds like.
Oh, man. I just, knowing how scam artists work, it's like a person with $15,000 is just like, I'm sorry, what? You know a guy who has $15,000? Yeah, I'd like to meet that guy. I'm sure I can figure out a way for him to give me that money.
That is like a perfect amount of money to get scammed out of, because it's like, it's not enough to buy a house. It's not even really enough. Like, I guess you could buy a car, but you couldn't buy like a very good car, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's not going to get invested. It's like an easy thing to get ripped off by. Cause it's it's not going to like change most people's lives in a permanent way. So you could probably convince them to like put it in something a little fishy and fuck them. Yeah.
Guys, if you're out there, if you ever get $15,000, buy a big ass TV.
The hugest TV.
And that's just $7,000 less they can ever get from you. So Vishal Sharma, So she owned a franchisee in Nevada who owned three stores, described another meeting that Mr. Patel convened in Reno the same year. And man, isn't it? This is just like Godfather 2. A lot of people that fuck with immigrants are immigrants themselves because they are acutely aware of the pressures these people are under. You know what I'm saying? And like, and it's like, oh, hey, I'm a friendly face. Come on. Like, I'll take care of you. And
Like you're saying, it sounds like not only are all these franchisees Indian or South Asian, but like the regional manager, like Aki is too, you know, like these are so, and I'm sure if you're a recent immigrant to the US, you like want to feel kinship and trust with somebody who's also from where you're from. Cause you don't necessarily know that many people. And just taking advantage of that really sucks.
Dude. Yeah. When I worked at AT&T in Connecticut, you would have like these students would come in and there would be like, it would be like, you know, either from like, you know, China or India or the Middle East. And they would have like a handler who was like a little more like established, a little more Americanized, usually older. Mm-hmm. And they would be part of these little like student like programs. Like, hey, you give us like this much money a month and we will set up your phone. We'll set up your fucking place to stay. And on occasion, like something would go wrong and the student would stop by the store unattended and be like, hey, I just need to check this out or whatever. And you like find out like these crazy fucking things. Like, wait, hold on. You're paying this guy how much a week? And I showed a guy how much his phone bill was. I was like, your phone bill is $60 a month. He's like, I pay him $175 a month. I was like,
wow,
bro. Yeah. It's fucked up. Yeah. Cause you know, like that's a scam artist looks for somebody that's isolated and vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And who's more isolated and vulnerable than that? Yeah.
There's a lot of immigration stuff like that where like, that's, the thing that, writer Gia Tolentino, her parents, I don't know if you remember this. She's Filipino and like her parents ran this like, basically scam thing to get Filipino teachers American visas to come teach in the US. Yeah. And it was like they would charge them an arm and a leg and like they would have to live together in really crowded apartments while they like tried to find them placements at schools. And it was basically just like very exploitative and ended up just like, you know, swallowing these people in debt to pay these fees to get the visas. And there are a lot of ways you can get fucked over if you're an immigrant to the US.
It's a fucking shame, man. I see if you work in service industry, I've seen tons of that construction. I've seen tons of that, it's crazy. Yeah. So, she said, so Mr. Patel said that he had the money to buy the best. So basically these people were like, kind of like bucking up to him at this point. Yeah. And he was like, yo, I got the money to buy the best lawyers. At the time, she said, we weren't scared. We just thought maybe that's just his style. Then we figure out this guy's template is not developing the territory. It's taking away the territory.
Right.
So Mr. Patel had said, he had said in an email that he had been informing the franchisees that Subway's lawyers were available to answer legal questions. But at one point, a franchisee sent Mr. Patel an anonymous complaint. He responded with an email to a large group of them, in which he threatened a lawsuit that would, quote, be so huge it would take nearly all of your life earnings in Subway in fighting this suit. Please don't test me. He said, please don't test me, especially when you don't have any basis.
Like, fuck.
What a messy bitch. I hate this guy. So Subway ended up terminating Mr. Sharma's contracts in 2017. Last December, in state court, he accused Mr. Patel of using rigged compliances and Subway of employing an unusual structure where the local agent is a supervisor as well as a competitor, which is a completely succinct way of describing what the fuck they're doing.
Right.
But the case was ordered into arbitration in Connecticut, but Mr. Sharma is appealing the decision. So dozens of franchisees in the region decided to appeal to Ms. Greco, that's the sister of the original owner, for help. Mr. Tripathi, our old homie Tripathi, He said, there is a deep sense of morass within the franchisee community, the group wrote in a 2016 letter. So they wrote this to Ms. Greco asking for help, asking that she designate somebody impartial to look into the matter. The franchisees said they suspected Subway's development agents of commissioning unfair slash bias slash questionable evaluations and forcing franchisees out at a throwaway price. And they feared retaliation. They said, needless to say, though, this is a time of essence. So Ms. Greco did not respond, but Mr. Patel was made aware that all his like his underlings were doing this.
Oh, and that's so mean. That's so shady. Dude, giving him the tip off and not doing anything. Fuck. Dude. That's like, this is a classic like HR's there to help the company, not to help you situation. Where like you go to them with a problem and it comes back on you. You know? Sucks. Dude,
my first pawn shop job, when I first started there, this lady was the manager. And they were just being real mean to her, and they pressured her to step down, take an assistant manager role. They brought in another manager, and that lady was not friendly or nice about it. It was like kind of like a little hostile to the old staff.
Yeah.
And so HR came in to like smooth things over, and they were like, "We're gonna have a meeting with everybody, a sit down meeting, and da da da." And I expressed my concerns about the new lady, and I expressed my favoritism for the old lady. And next day, I'm at work, and we're all in the fucking office. And the new lady was just like, "Oh, hey, by the way, Kathy told me everything y'all said. I heard it all. I heard everything y'all said about me." And I wasn't old enough to be like, "What the fuck?" That's like, you know, I was 20 years old. I couldn't like formulate a defense to that. I was just like, "Oh, fuck."
yeah.
Horrible. So Mrs. Hustler, so Patel hears about this. And Patel's like, "Yo, fuck this shit," because he does not play. This dude will beat your hand.
Yeah,
he will break your fingers with a hammer. So he was like, "So fuck it." So he gets Ms. Hustler, and he was like, "Hey, go in there." And this is a quote from an email, or I'm sorry, a quote from her saying what he said. He said, "Go in there and just throw your temperature probe right into every bit of food. It's not going to make temperature, and you can call them out in compliance." Mm. And she said he actually gave us specifics on what he wanted us to do. He directed her to visit during shifts with unexperienced employees who were more likely to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. Not all the franchisees who have left the Subway system operated their stores perfectly, and many did run afoul of local health inspectors. We've all been in a gas station Subway. We get that.
Yeah. I feel like if you've eaten at Subway, you've gotten sick from Subway.
Like I said, it gave me the flu. It wasn't even gastrointestinal. I literally got like just, yeah, I got sick. I got a respiratory infection from that shit. But dozens of franchisees, I hate that word, franchisees, contend that issues that never bothered Subway during its rapid expansion suddenly put them out of business in recent years. Mm-hmm. Like, "Oh, it's cool when you do it. It's a problem when I do it."
Right.
So those franchisees feel they have little recourse. Near Sacramento, Manal Khatri and her husband owned a Subway in a prime location just off the freeway. After Mr. Patel's inspector repeatedly marked it out of compliance around 2014, she recalled that she and her husband started to fight constantly. Why were they failing? Why couldn't he get everything into compliance? Ms. Khatri said they both repeatedly asked Subway headquarters for advice but never got a response. Eventually, the company took her into arbitration, and she said she was told to find a buyer for her store or risk a forcible closing. Mr. Patel rejected all the candidates she found. Records indicate that he now owns her restaurant.
Right. Yeah. Nobody's good enough. I know just the guy. Yeah, you're having trouble finding someone. Oh, that's so shitty.
Yeah. So
this guy
shitty.
Sucks.
Yeah. Fuck this dude. Yeah. If I ever meet Mr. Patel, I'd probably meet a million Mr. Patels. Like, hey, meet somebody with the last name Patel.
Hey, are you the one from Northern California?
Because what happens in the next 5 minutes is very dependent on what you tell me. So she was like, after it became clear Mr. Patel wanted to buy her store, she said that she realized her husband might not have been to blame for everything after all. that poor guy. He was like, So Mr. Patel said the Khatris asked him to buy the restaurant, though, in his defense. He said they asked him to, which I don't believe for a second. So another franchisee, Kanwardeep Virk, again, we're seeing like, this is just like, it's a theme. Said that starting in 2006, he operated four stores in the Lake Tahoe area that were profitable and compliant with Subway standards. His babies, he called them. Suddenly, at the beginning of 2016, he said he started failing evaluations. He said one inspector sabotaged a meatball storage bag by puncturing it with a thermometer and then waiting to record the temperature after it cooled down.
That's so shitty.
Yeah, he shanked his meatball bag. It's like prison shit. Meatball check, meatball check. Just coming in. That's insane. So Subway started arbitration proceedings against Mr. Virk. Such cases are typically heard near Subway's headquarters in Connecticut. Many store owners can't afford to travel to defend their stores in person, and that is an old school fucking scam. That's like, hey, yeah, we're gonna have the trial, or you can come and you gotta come in on Monday morning at 8:30, and also it's five cities away, or whatever the case. They've been fucking people over like that for hundreds of years, but. They said, yeah, many store owners, they just end up arguing their cases by phone or by filing documents. But in 2018, Subway initiated the equivalent of 29 litigation actions against 1,000 franchisees. Now, to put that into consideration in the scope, in that same year, McDonald's had 1.4 actions for McDonald's, Dunkin' Donuts, Pizza Hut. What's that?
So this is the rate per 1,000 franchisees of lawsuits? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, or them taking like litigation actions against their own franchisees. Like the shit.
Okay,
that, like,
so them suing the franchisees.
Yes,
okay.
Yeah, and it was
so Subway
29
has 29 per 1,000. McDonald's has
1.4
for 1,000.
Yeah.
Got
almost
it,
30
got
times
it.
Less.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So eventually Mr. Virk gave up. Mr. Patel now owns two of his former stores. Mm. Mr. Patel wrote that the restaurants had problem with food safety and labor practices and owed back rent, and that Mr. Virk himself arranged to close or transfer them. So the Federal Trade Commission requires Subway to produce an annual list of franchisees with permanently closed stores, which the company said allows prospective franchise owners the opportunity to contact them to discuss their experience with Subway. But many franchisees who received termination letters after being deemed noncompliant eventually sold their stores, sometimes under duress and often for far less than they believed the stores were worth, several franchisees said. So they don't even own the places anymore. So if anybody gets a hold of them, you know, they call, they're not talking to these people. And also, most of them are wrapped up in like ironclad NDAs that don't allow them to say what actually fucking happened. And this is like not common. Like this is like this is a very Subway specific phenomenon.
Right. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense in most cases for a business sale to involve an NDA. Like that's odd.
And then the owner before he died, DeLuca. They were asking him at a trade expo about like, hey, what do you people who are interested in getting into a fucking, you know, a franchise, what do you recommend they do? He goes, well, I recommend they talk to franchise owners because franchise owners are going to be able to tell them what's actually going on. They may be able to have some that have good experiences, some that have bad, but I would say talk to them before buying a franchise. And it's like, or why don't you just do what every other restaurant chain does and just have that information in your fucking packet where I can just read it and look at it. Why do I have to call 20 people who also don't know if I'm a plant from corporate? If I'm calling, I'm like, hey, what's your experience with Subway? How likely is it that he's going to be like, yo, man, it's bullshit. Like, nobody's going to say that.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so Subway, you know, as we all know right now, is in the midst of an ambitious makeover campaign. It hired a firm that has worked with Tiffany & Company and Saks Fifth Avenue, adding to its menu and stocking remodeled stores with new technology. Since Mr. DeLuca's death, the company has been on shaky footing. It was slower than many rivals to launch a digital loyalty campaign and offer mobile ordering options. So revenue fell from $10.4 billion last year, or fell to $10.4 billion, down 9.5% from 2015. In recent months, the chain has added a new chief information officer, a chief marketing officer, and a North American vice president. Ms. Greco retired last year. But as we talk about it, Subway's store count has shrunk by more than 2,000 since 2015. Mm. And essentially, Subway's chief development officer, this guy named Mr. Furtman, he said, we have to make sure ultimately that we have the right restaurants in the right locations. And it's like, yeah, well, that used to be just any restaurant in any location. Was
like
all
you said,
you
it's like,
needed.
Oh, this wasn't a problem when you were growing. Now, all of a sudden, we need to do some pruning here, you know?
Yeah, and so to kind of bring it full circle, we're going to stop by with our old friends, the Tripathis, and they said they feared they could lose yet more of their stores. They sued Subway and Mr. Patel in 2016 in California court, accusing the development agent of using a variety of techniques, including trumped up and false inspection reports, to justify terminating certain franchises. Subway invoked the clause in the franchise contract that requires disputes be resolved in private arbitration in Connecticut.
Yeah, again, like you said, that is a, literally across the country from where the Tripathis own the stores.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, arbitration is like, it's sort of like the HR problem, right? It's like often biased toward the company that is arranging the arbitration as opposed to open court, you know?
Yeah.
So very shitty. Very shitty.
Yeah, very shitty. And so, fee shitty. Mr. Tripathi. Now, this is another thing that's like a trope about immigrants that I found often is true, is the wildly educated and qualified careers they came from in their home countries.
Right.
And so Mr. Tripathi is a trained engineer with a business degree, and Ms. Tripathi holds a doctorate in chemistry. And they said,
and now they own Subway franchises.
Yeah, they said they were able to read and understand the reams of legal documents produced by the conflict, but they understand that many of their fellow franchisees cannot. And they own 38 stores. Like, they're doing well.
They're doing great.
They're feeling the pressure. It fucking sucks. They're getting treated this way, but they're doing well. And like you should do when you're getting a little bit ahead is look up for other people, because they're saying, the reason we're fighting them is that we can.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, yeah, like if you, you know, that's allyship. Use your fucking privilege. If you got a little bit of bread, you're a little more established, and you know you can help out people who are getting screwed over, that's what you should do, and they're doing it. So hats off to them.
Sure. Good for them.
Yeah, that's where the story ends. As of press time, Subway still sucks.
Makeover unsuccessful.
Yeah.
Still bad.
I just say, did you ever have like a Subway go-to?
I would usually get a BLT, because those are like really hard to fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, and also, again, the whole wet meat problem doesn't really apply when you're getting a BLT. So I would do that. I would do, like I said, I haven't been in years. I used to get them when I lived in Austin. I worked at on the drag at UT, and I would go to Subway for lunch. But when I was vegetarian, I'd do just the very sad veggie cheese sandwich, which is like one of the most pathetic things you can eat for lunch. What is your Subway go-to?
I think, so it used to be back when I was a kid, it was the roasted chicken breast with just salt and pepper, lettuce, and ranch when I was like a kid.
Nice.
Kid.
Simple. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I started classic.
Getting the Italian BMT, I like that. Mm-hmm. But as time went on, yeah, I usually just get, Italian BMT usually I get.
Like, once in a blue moon, I would get a meatball sub. I do like a meatball sub. The worst version of it is the Subway version, but like it'll still hit the spot if that's what you're craving.
I gotta say, I during the pandemic, I worked at Thundercloud for a little bit, and like I love Thundercloud. Thundercloud fucking rule. It's cheaper than Subway. It's better than Subway.
Thundercloud's pretty good.
And you have access to a Thundercloud. That's the way to go for sandwiches. Their meat is good. Their meat's fine, but their veggies are fucking really good. Yeah,
I agree.
Veggies. Yeah. anyway, my friend that passed away, Brian, who I mentioned all the time, he had a sandwich. It was like whenever he would get like a free sandwich off a sandwich cart or whatever. There was whatever, I forget what it was he would order, and you would add everything, and he'd be like, basically, well, I look at it, I'm getting a half off. That sandwich has to cost $17. I'm really fucking him over on that. Which is just one of the many great things he used to do. Anyway, guys, sound off in the comments. Tell us what your favorite sandwich is at Subway. But also, understand that they're shitty and predatory. Worth it? Worth it to open up a sandwich shop franchise or Subway franchise? No, not at all.
Keep saving up. Get a McDonald's. Don't stop at $15,000 and get a Subway, or like go in on it with two other people that have $15,000.
Run a
McDonald's together. Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be like it's always Subway in Philadelphia. Just get you and four of your friends open up a fucking Subway. Daniel Crow is a comedian I used to tour with, and he is asexual, and he's thinking about going on Jeopardy, and he could probably win it. He's very smart, but he was talking about using his winnings to buy a Chick-fil-A franchise, and he said Chick-fil-A is cheap to franchise, but they're very selective on who they work with, and he was like, the way I look at it, I've never even had sex.
I'm like the best candidate. Yeah, they can't get mad at my immoral lifestyle.
If they hire some guy with a married man with seven kids, ew, gross, he's been in pussy seven times at least. Very solid logic. I thought that was hilarious. But guys, well, hey, thanks for tuning in. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode today. And if you liked what you heard, you can follow us on patreon.com/liecheatandsteal. We do drop 2 more episodes every month. You have access to our Discord chat, which is a very fun place to be these days. Also, if you live in the Austin area, I'm going to be doing a show at Vulcan Gas Company with my old friend John Stringer. And so that's going to be a little blast from 2012. That's going to be fun. Kath, you got anything coming up?
I just want to say, if you're interested in our Patreon, I wanted to give you a little briefing on our last story. So our last couple episodes, we had a scam roundup at the end of August of a bunch of quick hits of recent scams that have been in the news. And then our most recent Patreon is about Park West Gallery, which is a scammy art gallery that operates only on cruise ships. So yeah. Definitely check those out on Patreon. I have some shows coming up. I have a show on, I believe, the 17th. It's called Post Moves Comedy. And then I have one that's in Prospect Leverett's Gardens. Then I have one on the 26th in Midtown, Jackknife Comedy. Follow me on Twitter to see those dates in Blue Sky and stuff like that. I'm Kath Barbadoro on social media. I also have another podcast called What a Time to Be Alive. Check that out. That comes out every week. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, guys, thanks for tuning in. You know, get out there. You know, if you have to eat somewhere for lunch, you know, if it has to be Subway, it has to be Subway. But just, you know, let us know. We put you on the game about it. But otherwise, get out there, be safe, be smart. But above all, don't get caught.
Don't get caught. See you next time.